Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome back into the studio after an absence of 2.5 years, Colm McAlindam. Is that correct?
It's close enough.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Colm, you have a definite accent, and I know people that like listening to you because you reflect what people think of as the way people from Ireland should speak.
Well, there's a lot of accents in Ireland. I presume you're telling me I have an accent. Everybody speaks like I do where I come from, Belfast, you know. There's generations of pupils at the schools I taught in who would not be so keen to hear me talking, but that's a story for another day.
Oh, okay. Well, today we're going to focus on something that I've been looking forward to for some time, and that is the position that Ireland finds itself as conditions are changing with relationship to the European Union, Britain's Brexit vote, and the North and South Ireland and Northern Ireland, and how all of that plays out. It seems to me at first simple, but as I've looked more deeply, it seems much more complicated. And perhaps listeners would find it helpful to think of another place which also has complicated relationships. First of all, you live in Belfast.
Belfast, yeah.
Okay. And for those listeners who might not know where Belfast is, where is Belfast?
Belfast is in British occupied Ireland, popularly known as Northern Ireland. But I'm an Irish Republican. I would refer to it as the six counties. The six counties of Ireland, which are still controlled by Britain.
Okay. And that in itself, just that description, mm-hmm. Suggests a number of layers here. At the present time, what is the relationship between those counties and Great Britain in terms of things like, simple things like trade or political control?
Well, when you say Great Britain, the country is actually the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Okay.
It's one country. And with the common market, with the European Union, there's now an invisible border. You wouldn't know where the border was if you were a tourist between the North of Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. It has ceased to exist. There's no, apart from road signs would change colour a bit in the south, the distances aren't kilometres, in the north are in miles. That's the only way you would know which part of Ireland you were in.
Okay.
And trade moves without restriction.
So if you were travelling from Belfast and you were either going to the Republic of Ireland or you were going to go across the water mm-hmm. to England, do you pass through any kind of border control or anything of that sort?
None whatsoever.
Okay. Now, many people are aware that there was a vote in England, actually, that included, who voted in that? Did everyone in?
Everyone in the United Kingdom, that's England, Scotland, Wales, and the North of Ireland, all voted in that.
Okay, but not the Republic of Ireland.
Oh, not the Republic. It's a different, independent country.
Right, and that's important. I bring that up because I think that sometimes people have to be reminded that that's the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in that vote in the counties, I'm sure there was a review of how many votes went for Brexit, how many did not. How did the six counties vote?
The six counties, this may not be exact, but I think it was about 65-35 to remain in the common market.
Okay.
And that was split. The Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, they were the only party in the north of Ireland that wanted Brexit.
Okay.
And the rest of the parties were definitely for staying in the European Union.
And to complete the picture, Wales voted for or against?
I wouldn't.
Is that pretty close?
I know that Scotland voted decisively to remain in the EEC.
Okay.
Wales, I think, was close, but I'm not just sure which way
they went.
Which way they went, yeah.
Okay. And so it was England mm-hmm. people in England who voted
yeah.
who voted for Brexit.
Yes.
Okay. And even with all of that, it was a pretty close vote, 52-48 or somewhere.
Yes, thereabouts. That's about it. Yeah.
Okay. Now, there's been a lot of talk about how to make that actually happen. It was after the vote, after the celebration or whatever, people said, okay, now we have to actually go through the process. And it was going to take a long time. It wasn't going to be immediate. And the process has been ongoing. And occasionally I catch a whiff of a suggestion that maybe Brexit could be stopped and not actually happen. Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, that's a distinct possibility. One of the political parties in England, the Liberal Democrats, they state that outright. That is their policy.
Right.
In the Conservative Party, about a third or maybe even more than that of them want to reverse the vote if there was any way they could do it.
Okay.
Labour Party is split as well on whether to stay or whether they would like a rethink. Scotland definitely want to stay in the European Union and are threatening another independence vote if their wishes are not acceded to. So once again, you asked me about Wales. I'm not really sure what the position is there.
Okay.
In the north of Ireland, you've got the situation that an increasing number of people, even DUP supporters who theoretically were for Brexit, are now beginning to see the economic disaster that it will bring on Ireland. That we were talking before we came in here about how integrated industry and farming in Ireland, north and south, has become.
Right.
That the processes involve raw materials going one way and the other, absolutely with no hindrance. Now they face the possibilities of customs check on imported, on raw materials, half-manufactured goods, finished goods, and all the rest of it going from one side to the other. Absolutely. It just doesn't bear thinking about the troubles that it's going to create. And a lot of people I know who voted for Brexit are now regretting it.
Ah, okay. And in the broader picture, if you wanted to travel from Belfast to France, for example, or Germany, and under the EU, that was pretty easily done.
Oh, no problems at all, yeah.
Okay. And so should the change go through, this, what you've been just talking about, applies to, I would think, not only the traveler on vacation, but the business person who is going to be setting up some company or working across borders. That would be much more complicated.
Well,
potentially.
Yes, there's two things there. The visitors in Dublin, the passport office is absolutely inundated with requests for Irish passports from people who are resident in the six counties. And so you could end up, even if there is Brexit, as we're entitled to, a lot of people in the six counties will now become citizens of the Republic of Ireland, which will mean that they will be able to move easily anywhere in the common market. Setting up businesses would be a different ballgame altogether. Then you would have to come into the realm of import duties and all the documentation that's needed that is associated with business and exports. And it could come to a head fairly soon because the common market, the EEC, they have ordained that the first thing to be settled is how much Britain owes to get out. Britain wanted to start negotiations on what the custom duties would be, mm-hmm. but they weren't allowed to do that. They have to decide how much they owe. The common market, the EEC, I keep calling it the old common market name, the EEC are putting in a bill of, I think it's 60 billion. This is for common EEC things like even the space agency and the Iron and Steel Union and helped underdeveloped countries that Britain signed up to when she was a member. Schemes that will run for 5, 6, 10 years. So they committed to this. And the view of the EC is that they have to pay this money. and they come to a bill of 60 billion, sorry. A lot of the hardliners are saying we're not giving them a cent. So this raises the possibility of the whole talks collapsing in very short order. And that would mean that immediately that World Trade Organization rules come into force with set tariffs on all class of goods. And that for Ireland would be absolutely tragic. It would set up customs posts, all sorts of investigations.
And by Ireland, you're referring both to the North.
I'm referring to the whole of Ireland, the whole of the island. It will have a bad effect on the Republic as well as the North.
Oh.
One example would be the dairy industry. Most of the big dairies are now situated in the Republic of Ireland, but they get a lot of their milk from the North.
Okay.
What's going to happen there? And sometimes the distance involved is only, a couple of miles.
Sure.
But this could involve massive documentation and cost and so on like that. And then, of course, the milk is brought back into the North from the South after it's been after it's been treated in the creameries. So, an absolute nightmare if it comes into existence.
So these were details that people, I remember leading up to the Brexit vote, people sort of alluded to or pointed and said, yeah, there's these, but we can take care of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But my sense was that the detail was not maybe fully appreciated, just the number of individuals that would have to be hired to work through all of these things. It wasn't just like a simple piece of paper to sign and a couple of things. When you have a highly integrated economies, it's difficult to separate out. Yeah.
Oh, it's. I think a lot of people that voted, as I said before, a lot of people who voted for Brexit have now changed their minds. There was a few, what would you call them, near almost slogans in place of thought beforehand. Buses were driving around with slogans that this would, if we left and we didn't have to pay all this money to the European Union, it would allow something like £1 billion a day to be spent in the health service.
This is just absolute nonsense,
you know. And it is now becoming, it's now coming home to roost that this was just talk and nothing else, lies basically. So people voted for Brexit, I think a lot of them voted for different things. One of the main things was that they would try and stop immigration because they felt this was why they were losing their jobs. But in large parts of England, the farmers have been pointing out that without Eastern European seasonal labour, they could not harvest their crops. English people are not happy to do this work or qualified now to do this work. And they're panicking. Oh, it's a state of chaos.
Okay. Now, there's a prime minister in England, Prime Minister May.
Mrs. May.
Yes, Mrs. May.
Mrs. May, yeah.
And you smile.
Yeah.
She had recently called for an early vote, thinking, as I understood, that this would enhance her hand as she moved forward with the Brexit negotiations. But as time went on, it was not a strengthening vote, but actually called into question this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So how was Mrs. May viewed, say, generally from perspective of Ireland?
She would be viewed as someone who doesn't give a toss about Ireland. It does not enter into her political calculations until she ended up with a wafer-thin majority and she needed to get the help of the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party, in the north of Ireland. Then suddenly she met with them. She didn't come over to visit. It was the only region of the United Kingdom that she didn't visit in the lead-up to the election and in the lead-up to the Brexit vote. She has never expressed any interest in what was going on in the north of Ireland, which was one of the reasons possibly that the talks and the executive in the north of Ireland has folded at the moment, and could remain folded for quite some time.
And as a bit more of the detail, my understanding is that Northern Ireland is considered to be part of England, of Great Britain.
Part of the UK.
Of the UK.
Great Britain and Northern Ireland is the official name of the...
Right, right. Got that. Okay. And my understanding is that as a result, you would have representation in Parliament from Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. How is there anything special about how that works or not?
At the moment. Well, the English Westminster, I think, is 650 members of Parliament.
Right.
17 come from the north of Ireland. So it's a rare time that they would have any influence whatsoever. At present, it will be 17, it's 18 at the moment. At present, there are 10 from the DUP, 7 from Sinn Féin, okay, and 1 independent unionist.
Okay.
That's how it has worked out. So Sinn Féin and DUP have practically swept the board.
Okay.
In that regard. So what do you mean?
I'm just curious. I think you've nicely described the relative numbers, mm-hmm, and also that there is, when you refer to Sinn Féin and DUP, are they relatively close, or what's the difference between those two groups in Northern Ireland?
You name a subject and they differ on it. Sometimes I think a lot of the DUP policy are wait to see what Sinn Féin stance is on something like gay rights or whatever, and they go the opposite. They're a strange amalgamation of people. Do you want some sort of brief outline of what they're made up of?
Maybe just a brief one, yes.
Yeah, they were founded in the mid-60s by Reverend Ian Paisley that you may well have heard
right
of. And Paisley made his name as a very fundamentalist, to my mind, racist anti-Irish preacher who got quite a reasonable following as regards this. Over the years, that following strengthened. As the Troubles went on, it seemed that his obduracy, his absolute refusal to make any concessions or talk in any way to nationalist Republican Irish people got a vote of confidence. And gradually, the DUP came into the ascendancy over the official Unionist Party, which had ruled the roost for years before that.
Mm-hmm.
As they got stronger, then you started getting official unionists attracted into the DUP. So you have two types in the DUP. You have the old fundamentalist ones who believe the world was made about 6,000 years ago, are against climate change, or deny climate change. You name a sort of throwback view of the world, and mm-hmm, they share it. But then there are other ones who have come in who are there because they see the DUP as being the strongest voice against Irish nationalism. And they, even though they may be uneasy with some of the statements of DUP ministers and so on, for instance, you've all have heard of the Giant's Causeway.
Mm-hmm.
When the visitor centre was opened, a big plaque was put on the wall, explanations of how it was formed 70 million years ago with the Eurasian plate and the American plate moved apart.
Mm-hmm.
This caused great objections, great offence to the DUP, who insisted that it had in fact been formed 6,000 or 7,000 years ago and God did it. And a plaque to that effect basically has been put up as well in conjunction with the old one, say, of course, there is another explanation for how this thing came to be, and the hand of God has to be seen in it so many thousand years ago, you know. So they, this is their strange amalgamation of people, joined mainly by the fact that they are anti-Irish,
okay,
and pro-union, and very sternly so.
And Sinn Féin, at the present time, how did that evolve from the earliest days?
Well, Sinn Féin was started just over 100 years ago, and the name just means ourselves. Their first election that they stood in was in 1919, and the basic policy was that Ireland should be on its own. Of the 106 MPs returned in all of Ireland, because all of it was controlled by the British at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 106 odd MPs, 72 were returned for members of Sinn Féin were returned, some Irish nationalists as well as that, and the rest unionists. Despite that almost three-quarter percent vote in favour of Irish independence, it wasn't granted until after a war of independence was fought, with the loss of many thousands of lives. And then the 26 counties were granted independence. They are now the Republic of Ireland. But in the north, the six counties were held on. And that was basically the seeds of the trouble, because the way the nationalist people were treated was what caused the IRA to exist or to come into being.
And the IRA at the present time, for those who are...
Well, the IRA that fought the war has disbanded, and most of the combatants have now moved into politics. And Martin McGuinness, who was the first minister on, up until he died, the joint first minister up until he died earlier this year, was of course a well-known IRA commander in Derry. Lots of other ones all over the place, all over parts of the six counties are now councillors, MPs, and whatever, you know. But the IRA has ceased to exist. However, there are a lot of Republican splinter groups who do not accept the situation and who want to continue the fight. And to tie this in with our previous discussion about Brexit, this is where Brexit, they will see as a help. If a border is established, customs posts will be established.
Oh.
And a pound, I bet a pound against the dud pen against a pound, that they will be attacked, which will call for the British Army or whatever it is to come in to defend them. And you have the British Army back on the streets, and the whole process could slowly but surely start again. So it's a possibility, but it is a distinct possibility.
Okay. Mike Malevsky here. I've been talking with Colm, who's from Belfast, visiting in Palmer, Alaska, and we've been reviewing some aspects of the present situation with Brexit and also a bit of the history of Ireland. We've been talking politics for some time. Colm, what about the economies, I say economies, of the northern counties and the Republic of Ireland? How are they doing?
Judging by emigration figures, not that well. Emigration from the south has, in particular, has been very, very bad. There was the so-called Celtic Tiger, which people seem to have heard of, which was completely illusory. It was built mainly on money being doled out to entrepreneurs, which they now are not able to pay back and are going bust in big numbers, and was used building expensive houses for ourselves. Then the bottom fell out of that, I think it was 2008, and the down south, the house building industry and general industry has not recovered since. A whole generation has left the country, and one of the things, there's slight improvement in the construction industry of late, but they're having to say that Ireland, which normally was overrun with bricklayers, carpenters, electricians, has now got a massive shortage of the same, because they're in Canada, they're in America, they're in Australia, they're in England, where they all left, and there don't seem to be in any rush to come back. So there's a real bottleneck there as a cause of that. The economy in the north is kept going mainly by British government payments. That I'm not sure of the exact figure, but much higher than anywhere else. You have the people are employed by the state in one form or another, and private industry is not in very good shape. So it isn't a very rosy picture. The south does seem to be on a bit of a recovery, but it's partial and centred mainly in the Dublin area, where they've got a bottleneck about lack of housing and no new houses being built. So that will, I think, stop that recovery fairly quickly.
Okay. Colm, how long have you lived in Belfast?
Pretty well all my life, apart from a short period in Derry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And for those people who are not familiar with Belfast, describe it perhaps in general terms. It's bigger than Palmer.
It's slightly bigger than Palmer, yeah. I think the greater Belfast area has about 500,000, getting on to 500,000 people.
Okay.
It's basically two cities, especially during the Troubles. There was large parts of the city where I just would not have been seen dead in, and probably would have been seen dead in if I had gone there. It was just too dangerous for nationalists like me to be seen in large part of the area. And I know Protestants felt the same about our side of the city. But it's difficult to say. Like, you're sometimes slightly surprised to hear people saying it's a nice city, it's an attractive city, you know, because I don't really think about it in those terms. We have what I would have described as mountains on both sides of the valley. Until I came here and would be embarrassed to describe our hillocks as mountains when you compare the scenery around Palmer. But it's pleasant enough. And you don't have to go very far outside it to get really pleasant countryside.
And in terms of climate, summer and winter, what would you expect typically in June or January?
But this time of the year, I think the climate would be about the same as here, maybe slightly cooler. I've experienced warmer days as warm here as I've ever experienced in Ireland. I've been told this is an unusually wet summer.
It is.
But it would not be unusually wet if you were in Ireland. We get a lot more rain.
Okay.
Even on the east coast, the rain-bearing winds are coming up from the west. It generally gets drier as you move eastwards across the country. The winters, of course, would be much, much milder than here. We would go for maybe a couple of years without snow at all. Wow. And if we did get snow, it would be a couple of days of it or a week of it. Then every now and then you will get a bad spell. But I think the last really bad winter was back in the... Well, it was snow lasted for a couple of months. I think it was back in the mid-60s.
Oh, wow. Okay. That, transportation, is it easy to get around in terms of mass transit?
There's a good bus system. And as a byproduct of the Troubles, one of the things, like if there was a riot going on and you wanted to block a road, nothing was better than a big double-decker bus. Encourage the driver to get out, put it sideways across the road and set it on fire. And that kept the police and the army out for a while anyway, you know. So you had, because of this tendency, shall we call it, buses were often stopped, particularly going to nationalist areas. And that gave birth to what's the black taxis, where enterprise individuals went over to England, bought these old second-hand London black cabs, if you're familiar with the sort of thing, and started driving them up and down roads in nationalist areas. This was then copied by people in Protestant areas as well. So you now still have a flourishing black taxi industry. And the prices are cheaper than buses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. They're not taxi prices because you don't have individual use of a taxi. You get in a taxi and it'll stop at bus stops and take up. And so you're going down with about 7 or 8 people sharing the taxi with you. And they're coming very regularly. It was described at one time as the most regular bus service anywhere in Europe because you didn't have to wait more than a couple of minutes for either a bus or a black taxi would come along and at a reasonable
that's
cost.
That's kind of unique, right?
I haven't heard of it anywhere else, but it came up out of a unique set of circumstances, and it has worked very well.
Okay, well, we've just about come to the end of our time here. Colm, do you have any last comments to make before we've covered a lot of ground before we finish?
Comments on
being here in Palmer.
Oh, being here in Palmer, yeah, Yeah, I enjoy it very much. Like just to get out and walk to the shops and just look at the mountains all around you, just sort of lifts me, gives me a lift every morning. I still would love to see a few more people walking. I walk to Fred Myers every morning. And
all right.
I think if I've seen four or five people walking at that time on these lovely footpaths, that would be the height of it, you know. So, no, I'm very impressed with a lot of things about it, how clean it is compared to towns of similar size in Ireland.
Oh, really? Well, good.
I think there's a greater civic pride, I think, here than I experience in a lot of smaller towns in Ireland. The only thing I would recommend was one thing that worked very well in Ireland for the other thing was a plastic bag tax.
We've had conversations about that.
Yeah, it worked very well. People changed their habits very, very quickly in Ireland with a very modest charge on plastic bags. It's a bad use of a scarce resource, just these bags being doled out.
We're heading in that direction.
I'm very glad to hear that.
All right. Well, thank you, Colm, from Belfast, for coming in here and sharing some observations about the situations, history of Ireland, both the counties in the north and the Republic. I hope to have you back again where we can continue the conversation, perhaps address some other issues. Have a good day.
Thanks very much. Pleasure.